Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good morning. First and foremost, I need to express publicly my deepest sympathies for the family of the loved ones of Mr. Freddie Gray. I had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Gray's family to discuss some of the details of the case and the procedural steps going forward. I assured his family that no one is above the law and that I would pursue justice on their behalf. To the thousands of city residents, community organizers, faith leaders, and political leaders that chose to march peacefully throughout Baltimore, I commend your courage to stand for justice. I also commend the brave men and women, both in uniform and out, who have stepped up Monday night to protect our communities from those who wish to destroy it. As the city's chief prosecutor, I've been sworn to uphold justice and to treat every individual within the jurisdiction of Baltimore City equally and fairly under the law. I take this oath seriously, and I want the public to know that my administration is committed to creating a fair and equitable justice system for all. No matter what your occupation, your age, your race, your color, or your creed, it is my job to examine and investigate the evidence of each case and apply those facts to the elements of a crime in order to make a determination as to whether individuals should be prosecuted. This is a tremendous responsibility, but one that I sought and accepted when the citizens of Baltimore City elected me as a state attorney. And it's precisely what I did in the case of Freddie Gray. Once alerted about this incident, on April 13th, investigators from my police integrity unit were deployed to investigate the circumstances surrounding Mr. Gray's apprehension. Over the course of our independent investigation in the untimely death of Mr. Gray, my team worked around the clock, 12 and 14 hour days, to canvass and interview dozens of witnesses, view numerous hours of video footage, repeatedly reviewed and listened to hours of police videotaped statements, surveyed the route, reviewed voluminous medical records, and we leveraged the information made available to us by the police department, the community, and the family of Mr. Gray. The findings of our comprehensive, thorough, and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges. The statement of probable cause is as follows.
Well, you heard it. That was the Baltimore State's attorney, the state's attorney for Baltimore, announcing the indictment of police officers that killed Freddie Gray. Marilyn Mosby is probably the youngest state's attorney in the country. She's only 35 years old. But her message was loud and clear, and the reason she was elected was primarily, or I won't say primarily, but largely due to the fact that she wanted to be different from other prosecutors. She wanted to go after police officers that illegally are killing, well, mostly black men, but definitely illegally killing citizens throughout Baltimore, throughout Maryland, throughout the country. And her indictment, which you just heard today, should do wonders for Baltimore. First of all, I have no doubt that her probable cause is justified. We will find out in the course of a trial exactly what happened here. But we're learning more and more about what happened to Freddie Gray and more about the circumstances that suggest that the way the police acted was not exactly lawful and possibly quite worse. But more importantly, what she shows is that we can obtain justice. There is a way to obtain justice in 2015 in America that does not involve violence in the streets, does not involve riots, does not involve burning down buildings. It involves seeking justice through probable cause, through indictments, through a trial in front of a jury, where you have to prove doubt, prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. This is good. This is important. This is necessary. This is how you achieve justice under our American system. I'm very, very proud of Marilyn Mosby. I'm proud of the system when it works. And when it doesn't work, we have to work to make it work. So what do we know about Freddie Gray now? We know a lot more than we knew just a few days ago. We know, for example, that the police lied to investigators. That's important because they didn't tell the truth to investigators. It suggests that there may be a lot more they didn't tell the truth about. One of the things they didn't tell the truth about is another person in the van. It looks like they made several stops after picking up Freddie Gray. We know also that he was not carrying a switchblade, as was wrongly reported earlier on. I told you 2 weeks ago when I first reported on this case that I didn't think the police had any probable cause to stop Freddie Gray. Apparently, he saw them and he started running. But you know what? In America, you have a right to run on public streets. You have a right to run from police even, unless you there's an arrest warrant out to get you, or the police see you committing a crime, or some other way. You're in police custody or fighting police, or the police, you know, approach you and demand something. In this case, there was nothing. He merely saw them and started to run. He didn't want to deal with them. He didn't want to be approached by them. He didn't want to be harassed by them. That's okay in America. You still have a right to avoid contact with police unless you've done something wrong, unless you've committed a crime, unless there's some warrant out against you. The police chased him anyway, caught him, and found he had nothing on him but a legal knife that I'm sure he used or would have used for self-protection in a very tough neighborhood of Baltimore. It was not a switchblade, which would have been illegal, as has been commonly reported, but a regular knife. Now, why a switchblade is illegal and a knife isn't, we can discuss. There's not that much difference between the two in terms of damage they can cause. But the point is, the man did nothing wrong. Okay, the police pick him up. He's done nothing wrong. They run after him. That's, of course, bad. That is a reason for a police complaint. What follows, of course, turned bad into what Marilyn Mosby says is second-degree murder. They put him in the police van. They do not put him in a seatbelt, which is required. Indeed, one report suggests that he banged his head hard against a bolt inside the van. A bolt? There's a bolt sticking out inside the van? Well, you could imagine if you drive in a certain way, you could stop and start a car and cause someone's head to hit a bolt. Why is there an exposed bolt in the van? Why didn't they put him in seat belts to begin with? Whether or not they started and stopped the car a lot, that's been termed a rough ride by some who know about this a little more than I do. Whether or not the police gave Freddie Gray a rough ride, if they had simply followed the department's regulations and put him in a seatbelt, he might not have hit that bolt on his head. Now, the police claim that he was thrashing around and intentionally trying to harm himself. I guess we'll find out at trial who's to be believed. But there's more to the story, of course. They made another stop, and even though they carried him into the police van, they apparently determined he needed leg shackles to keep him from moving, I guess. So they made a stop for leg shackles. They made a stop for another person they picked up, and yet a fourth stop. Now, what's interesting about the fourth stop is that it wasn't reported by police. They didn't even disclose it. So the only reason we know about it is because an ATM security camera, which after all is mostly used to figure out who is taking money from an ATM, that caught it, which tells you a couple things. One, it tells you that Marilyn Mosby and whoever else is investigating this case, and let's face it, there are probably some police investigating this case, and they should be praised. Not all police are bad. Not all police are evil. Most of them are, in fact, trying to get justice. So the police investigators, the prosecutor's office, did a fantastic job in finding an ATM security tape in the area. I guarantee you that's not normally done in investigations. And what that does is it shows that the police were lying. And once you know the police lied about something as small as a fourth stop, it makes you wonder what else they're lying about. Indeed, I think that discovery may be one of the main reasons why they brought charges. We still don't know exactly what happened to Freddie Gray. We may never know. There will be a trial, thank God, and we will hear the evidence, and I'm sure we'll know a lot more after that trial, and I'm sure after 12 members of the Baltimore community determine the guilt or innocence of the police officers involved, we'll all have much stronger views as to exactly what happened that day. If there had been body cameras on the police, if there had been body cameras in the van, we would know a lot more. Which is why I have long advocated that they be nationwide. But know this, that justice, while often slow, while often incomplete, while often wrong and not happening, know that it can happen in America. And let's all cheer Marilyn Mosby and her hard work. And wish her luck in proving her case. And then may the guilt or the innocence be shown fairly in a trial. This is the way these kinds of things should be dealt with in America. The phone number is 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Please feel free to call in and add your 2 cents. We'll be right back with your calls right after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it super nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. In an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, talking about the indictments today of the officers that killed Freddie Gray by Marilyn Mosby, a 35-year-old state's attorney in Maryland, maybe one of the youngest state attorney, that's what they call it in Maryland, in the country. And she, interesting, she comes from 5 generations of police officers. So what's really good about this young prosecutor is that she's got the ultimate street cred, right? She's young, black woman. She is 5 generations of police officers. She knows all sides of this conflict. And what that means is that she hopefully, as much as anyone can be in the country, she will be trusted to seek justice and get justice in the right way. If the police deserve conviction, she will prosecute to conviction. But I don't think police officers can condemn her as being anti-police or reflexively anti-police, given her history, given her where she comes from. So I think it's fantastic. I think she's the right person for the moment, and I was really glad to hear about the indictments. Let's go to some of the calls. 888-488-MARK. Kevin from Santa Fe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. I wanted to, I'm really excited about the indictments. I don't know if excitement is the right word. I'm very grateful.
I'm grateful as well.
They brought something to bear that is hopefully going to give justice in this case. And the other day we were talking about the rioters, and
yeah.
I didn't get through, but I wanted to back up to that, if I may.
Okay.
And it's just because I have some sympathy, and my sympathy for those people comes from the fact that it seems kind of sarcastic to hear other people saying, why didn't they just trust the system? Because recently this is a system that has shown actual videos of them getting murdered, like Eric Garner in New York, and nothing happened.
And Walter Scott in like South Carolina. Ferguson. But
we've had cases in Ferguson where the system went on to not indict Darren Wilson.
That's true.
As far as I'm concerned, he's as guilty as George Zimmerman. And thirdly, out comes a report saying that the system does not serve them. The system is there just to fleece them. That these police departments are just using them as a revenue stream, and unconstitutionally so, from the conclusions of the Federal Justice Department.
Kevin, let me address. Let me raise a lot of things you say, and then we can continue on the other side of the break. And I know you got more to say, but I just want to address them before you say more. First of all, I'll be very clear. I am not at all saying, I never said, that people should just sit back and wait for the justice system to work. I strongly came out in support of all of the thousands of nonviolent protesters that marched throughout Baltimore. I told you that if I was in Baltimore, I would march with them. I am not saying lean back, relax, and wait for the justice system to work. Absolutely not. You know how much I complained about the killing of Eric Garner, for example. You know that I don't think that justice always works in America. And you probably know, if you know my personal story, that I personally had to work very hard to get justice for my family, for my sister. I'm not saying sit back. What I am saying, though, is that marching nonviolently in the streets, pushing for indictments, petitioning elected representatives, loudly saying in social media and in the streets and that justice needs to be done, shouting no justice, no peace, that's fantastic. In fact, Marilyn Mosby cited the protesters who shouted no justice, no peace as one of the reasons, you know, that she's giving justice. Of course, obviously, she should do it based on the law. My point is, all that is good stuff. What I condemned was not advocating for justice loudly, vociferously, in a great American fashion. What I condemned was the people who I don't think were doing this for Freddie Gray, and neither does Freddie Gray's sister, who went out, burned down a senior center next to a church where their grandmothers might have lived in a very poor community, went in and looted a pharmacy and burnt it down, which, you know, there are very few pharmacies in this area because a lot of them are afraid to go in. My point was that the violence, the looting, the arson, I don't think it was done for Freddie Gray. I think it was opportunistic. I think it was people, you know, the kid throwing rocks and bricks at police, the one who was corralled by his mother. That doesn't help anything. That doesn't help anything at all. Those are the ones I'm condemning. I am no way saying that those who march peacefully for justice shouldn't be praised. They should be. We'll be back after this.
Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking, of course, about Baltimore and the indictments that happened today, and still some discussion about what I consider a reasonable way to protest. And I'm not saying not protest. I want to be very clear about that. I support protests. I've led protests. What I don't support is violence against innocent people, against property that, you know, would have been used to house a senior center. That doesn't help Freddie Gray. That doesn't help justice. If anything, attacking police officers, which rioters did, injuring 7, gives sympathy to cops when we want to go after the bad cops. So let's do it through a great prosecutor like Marilyn Mosby, and I wish her all the success in the world. Kevin, I'm sure you want to respond. You go right ahead.
Well, there's a lot of places where I agree with you, and I don't want to misconstrue my statements either as being in support of that senseless violence. What I'm saying, I think, is that I'm not surprised that it happened in what I consider to be a broken system that time and again has denied justice and worked against them. And that I just sort of think I understand that it's like that can be very frustrating. And there are certain points where I think when I think about it objectively, if the tables were turned, I think about like situations like in Connecticut when Tea Partiers were showing up to protests with AK-47s and guns strapped to their strapped to their hips and
yep.
stuff. And it's like, what would happen to the black protesters if they decided to exercise their Second Amendment rights and show up at those protests?
Well, I'll tell you something. That's why I don't think those rights are Second Amendment rights. As I read the Second Amendment, it says that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. In other words, if you want to serve in the National Guard, you can carry these weapons strapped to your hip. I don't believe citizens have a constitutional right to bear arms, except, you know, unless they're trained police officers or in a well-regulated militia or such. You're absolutely right. I think there's a double standard. I cannot imagine if any of those protesters had even legally – of course, Maryland's probably got stricter gun control than most states, but – hypothetically, if black protesters in Missouri, which probably has very lax gun laws, started wearing guns on their hips, it could have been a massive shootout. And so you're right. It's absolutely inconsistent standard of justice. And I don't doubt that there would have been a lot more danger if they'd carried arms.
Thought.
Yep.
Do you know what a well-regulated militia was in 1776 or thereabouts?
I do. They would call up
slave patrol in North Carolina and South Carolina and states like that.
Well, it wasn't just a slave patrol, but you're right that was used for capturing fugitive slaves. It was basically where they would call up all able-bodied adult white men and go after Native Americans, to go after slaves, to go after, you know, Lexington and Concord, to go after the British, but basically to defend the village or the town against something or other. I mean, you could even call it a posse in the Old West. These things rarely don't exist anymore, except for the National Guard. I think I know what a militia was. I don't think they hardly exist anymore, and that's why I think the Second Amendment is largely archaic and moot.
Thanks for letting me on. I'm going to go back to listening.
Thank you for calling in. Let me go to Anna on line one from Springfield, Massachusetts. Anna and I talked a couple days ago, or maybe it was yesterday.
About
the psychology of the rioters. And I know you wanted to add your 2 cents some more today. Go right ahead.
I have 4 cents today.
All right. We have more time than we did yesterday, so that's good.
The first 2 cents actually rises directly out of the conversation you've been having with Brian. I think every American, black, white, pink, young, old, poor, rich, should see a police video. You can Google Joseph Hausman, Kalamazoo, Indiana, summer of 2014, last summer. Joseph Hausman, Kalamazoo, Indiana. This is a white guy with white hair who was across from a Dunkin' Donuts and in Kalamazoo with a rifle across his shoulder. He wasn't brandishing it, but he was drunk. Several people called the cops. This is 10-minute long police video. They came up for 10 minutes. They talked him down as he swore at them, and he's going to exercise his right to carry, open carry, and made obscene gestures. And I don't mean with his hand. He reached down between his legs to make obscene gestures.
Gotcha.
They talked him down and talked him down and talked him down, and finally one of them came over. He surrendered his rifle. The guy the policeman took the magazine out, put it on the ground, didn't secure it, and I almost put his hand on the guy's shoulder. So this is a white man, an older white man. The next day, he went to the police station and picked up his rifle. He was never ticketed, arrested, or anything.
What?
Then I turn around and I watch 20-minute video of Tamir Rice, the youngster.
Right.
And for 20 minutes, just the public surveillance video was on him. He's walking back and forth, up and down the sidewalk with his black plastic gun, which looks real, I will say. But I remember my brother and I being his age playing with cap guns, cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians. It's play. For 18 minutes and 52 seconds, I watched him do that. And then in 2 to 8 seconds, a cruiser came up, and 2 seconds blew Tamir Rice off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
and
a 12-year-old boy. Just
a 12-year-old boy.
Right, not
and
an adult.
The point is to see how a white man is treated by yeah. by 50 police and how a black boy is treated or black men. And what I contend, and you don't like this, but you're an intellectual, so I hope you'll consider this from an intellectual perspective, is if I try to get in the head of a young black man for whom these things are life and death, then I absolutely, perfectly am okay with youthful violence or rioters. I'm glad nobody was killed. But I think the fact that, and it's too bad that old ladies and so on can't get their prescriptions filled because that CVS is gone. But I think there's a bigger picture that's more important. I'm old enough to have been watching TV during 1964 and 65 and seeing all what was going on. And by the way, at my age, there were still 20 black people lynched around the neck in my lifetime. I'm 68 years old. That's according to Tuskegee Institute statistics. Anyway, my feeling is that of the necessary and sufficient conditions to bring about a reduction that we have experienced since the 60s in the personal and institutional racism in the U.S., that it has been a necessary condition that Americans, white Americans, have seen on TV the violence and deaths of blacks has been perpetrated against them, and we endured the consequent riots and violence for 10 years of blacks against the murders and the lynchings and all the rest of the garbage.
Okay.
And while Martin Luther King was a necessary condition and the laws changing in the 60s, but I feel it was they would not have been sufficient, even taken altogether, without violence.
Okay, let's go through and break it down. As you said,
okay.
I am an intellectual because I agree with a lot of what you had to say. I do disagree with some of what you had to say. So let's try to unpack and figure out where we agree, where we disagree. First of all, the whole first part that you said, the basic fact that cops are more willing to be careful with a crazy drunk old white man than they are with a real rifle than they are with a playful young black boy with a fake gun. I completely agree with you. I mean, now admittedly that's anecdotal. You named two examples, but I think there's far more than two. I think there's hundreds of examples of exactly what
They're
you
both-
say.
Those
right. No, no. I'm agreeing with you.
Videotape.
Let me agree with you, Anna. I'm agreeing
okay.
with you. All right. I'm on your side on this. On this part, I'm on your side.
Okay.
I completely agree with you. And I think some of this is preconditioning, racist preconditioning that many Americans, perhaps even most of us, suffer from. Even some black Americans suffer
Absolutely.
From fears of young black males more than older white men when it's not really warranted. Actually, if you want a justified fear, you can be feared of men because men commit crimes 10 times more than women. And sexist or not, I think that actually is a reasonable fear because, men are more dangerous than women. Now, that being said, as a man, we have to recognize 99% of men are innocent. But the point is that you are more likely to face a threat from a man than from a woman, no question.
Truly.
So that kind of profiling I accept. But what you're saying, this kind of racial profiling, there's no doubt it exists. It's been proven objectively that it exists. I think we all of us kind of know that it exists. And anything we can do to try to dampen that down is a good thing. Now, let's move on. Has there been progress since the 60s? You concede there's been progress since the 60s. Not enough. We have a lot farther to go. But, I can't recall, many lynchings in my lifetime. And I think there's been certainly murders of black people, but not, you know, no one's being hung from a tree that I know of. That's a good thing. So we're getting somewhere slowly. I know that may seem like small consolation given all the other killings going on. The real question is, how did we get from 1965 to 2015 in the last 50 years, and how do we get from where we are now to 2065? And I would argue that this is the old conflict between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, right? This is the good cop, bad cop, if you will, only in this case it's good protester, bad protester. There's always been, in any movement, there was the same thing actually with gay people that the vast majority supported, working with authorities. And then there was ACT UP, which would do die-ins in churches. It wasn't violent, but it would be, you know, extreme protests and trespassing and things like that. There's always a question of how far to go. And there is actually a middle ground between nonviolent, peaceful, lawful protest and violent looting, rioting, so forth. And that middle ground is civil disobedience, where you actually break the law to make your point, but you're still not committing violence. And I would agree there are times for civil disobedience. Martin Luther King agreed there are times for civil disobedience. If people really aren't listening to your nonviolent, peaceful protest that's legal, then I think you start doing other nonviolent actions that maybe even break the law. But when it comes to the violence, when it comes particularly to the burning down of the senior center, to me, is the classic example of a counterproductive action, of an action that harms the community and does so.
Counterproductive for who, though?
For the black community, for the poor people of that community.
But one of the things I said yesterday is all blacks in the United States are not all alike. And as much as a white woman, middle-aged woman, I try to get in the heads of black people, different black people, you're saying that it's counterproductive for some part of the community not to burn down those
I think
things.
It's counterproductive for everyone. Who does it possibly help to burn down the senior center? It helps no one.
I think it's helpful because I don't think people pay attention. I don't think that the progress that has been made towards racial justice would have come this far if it weren't for, as well as Martin Luther King and these other things.
Anna, let me ask you a question.
Because
let me ask you a question, Anna.
10 years of rioting.
Anna, let me ask you a question. You know the indictments today issued by Marilyn Mosby.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any doubt, and if you do, feel free to say so. You have a right to your opinion. Do you have any doubt that Marilyn Mosby would have issued those indictments if there had not been riots, but there had been large peaceful protests, but there hadn't been riots, there hadn't been looting, they hadn't burned down the senior center? Do you think that those events made Marilyn Mosby more likely to indict than if there had only been peaceful protest?
I wouldn't speak personally about her because I don't know anything more about her than has just been on the news. But I will say that I think if there hadn't been riots in Ferguson and then uproar close to riots, well, two assassinated policemen in New York after Garner, I think that yes, there is a wave going across the country of people saying we better damn well stop letting this happen and letting young black men get murdered, because people are starting to get so mad that we have to pay attention. In other words, they're getting violent, and we can't, and so as one municipality after another around the country has these things happen, and time goes by, they say, you know what, it's no longer safe for us not to indict these people. They're clear cases, in my humble opinion, of murder.
Okay. Well,
so,
you and I are going to respectfully disagree on this point.
Yeah.
In my view, mm-hmm. the reason why people are noticing these things, like, for example, I don't recall any riots when Trayvon Martin was killed. Were there riots? I don't remember if there were. I don't remember any. I do remember the injustice. I do remember angrily coming on this program and talking about George Zimmerman looking to go after him and angrily demanding justice and being very upset
Trayvon
myself.
You can think of Trayvon, I do, as the first in this particular series
events. But here's my point. There's been injustice against young black men, particularly by police officers, but also by others, for centuries in America, definitely for decades, definitely in the last years. It occurs every year. I think the reason why it's getting press is not, and maybe you think, I know you think I'm wrong, but that's okay. You have a right to. I don't think it's the violence. I think it's the demands for justice. I think it's thousands of people marching in the streets. I think that now this is coming to white America's attention, because black America has known that it's gone on for centuries, and some whites have as well. And I don't think the violence is necessary. I actually think the violence takes away from calls for justice, because then police officers are more trigger happy, more scared for, and let's face it, they have a right to be scared about some in the community. And it's really hard to do community policing and work with the community when you're afraid
when you're murdering some of them.
Well, or when they're coming after you. I mean, I don't want a war between police and blacks and poor, I shouldn't just say blacks, and poor people in the streets. I don't want that war. It's not good for the poor people. It's also not good for the police. I want community policing. I want the police to live in the communities.
I think it's good for both of them, because one circumstance under which this wouldn't be coming up is with the police would police themselves. There are murderers among the police. They've got long records from everything we've seen coming out in the last year. They many or most of them, or maybe all of them, have records of prior misconduct.
Anna, please, not many or most of them, some of them.
Well, in these incidences where people have been shot, I'm thinking also of a white guy on a horse in Arizona, I think.
There are horrible cases of police violence, but please don't tar 90%+ of police for the actions of some really, really bad cops.
No, I was saying in these incidences where young blacks are getting killed by the police, that's what I'm saying. In these instances, the police that have been involved in these have frequently turned out to have a history of misconduct that has been ignored and tolerated. And
shouldn't be. And I would be the first to argue that you shouldn't hire as a police officer anyone that's got priors like that. Absolutely.
So if the police were policing themselves, might just go away.
And they should be. And let's all commit, you and me, Anna, and everyone else listening to us, let's all commit to reform police forces so they don't hire such bad cops, so they don't, these things don't happen in the future. But I got to move on because I'm on a break.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna, for expressing your opinion. I think we agree more than we disagree, but yeah, there are some things we do disagree on. Thank you for your call. Join in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. Show. This is Mark Levine talking about Freddie Gray and Baltimore and, whatever you think. Tamara from Joplin, Missouri, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, listen, if you go to the Baltimore Sun today and look at an article called Videographer, Freddie Gray was folded like origami. He said he went out and recorded what they were doing to him, and that they had him folded up like a crab, and that there's 8 other video cameras on that street, and none of them captured anything.
Well, yeah, no, there was absolutely a citizen who recorded. Did you watch the video, Tamara?
Yes, and it does show Freddie Gray folded up like an accordion. Oh, my God, it's horrific. What they folded him up like an accordion, tossed him into the back of that truck, and then that driver drove back and forth like a crazy person, tossing that poor man around. Oh, my God. It's called a Baltimore... It's some kind of Baltimore ride.
No, there's a rough ride is when the police put someone in there.
No, it's got a different name to it than rough ride. It's a
rough
name.
Oh, maybe so. I'll tell you this. I looked at the video, and I looked exactly at that one that you cited, the Baltimore Sun, Freddie Gray was folded like origami. They definitely had him. They definitely hit his knees were collapsing underneath him. I'm not sure that I see quite like an accordion in the video that I saw, but I'll keep looking. Folks, if you've got more information on this, send it to me at marklevinetalk.com. No doubt this story will not be going away. We're going to talk more about it next week. For now, though, I hope everyone has a pleasant and wonderful weekend. And, well, we'll talk next week. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk.